Our first question comes from Ken Vogel. Please state your media outlet.
Hey, it's Ken Vogel from Politico. You guys have any independent evidence that this, you know, that these plans are afoot? Seems like they've denied it pretty adamantly. And then second part of the question is, Bob said that the publicity itself will discourage potentially affected voters from coming out to the polls. Won't this lawsuit and this call, isn't the very purpose of this call to generate publicity for this lawsuit and this alleged plan?
Well, Ken, if I could, this is Bob, and then allow Mark and Joseph, feel free to jump in. Let me be very clear, first, about the purpose of the lawsuit. The purpose of the lawsuit is to reassure people that this is not going to go unanswered. We have particular voters who were threatened by this conduct and two organizations that are actively seeking to turn people out to vote who would be in this position and who could conceivably believe that they shouldn't respond, shouldn't register, shouldn't vote, because they would be subject to these illegal challenges. So with all of the press on this, if there's any press effect, if you will, any publicity, it will be clear that the purpose of this exercise is to protect people, and they can go forward in the knowledge that we are going to make absolutely sure these foreclosure lists are not used to challenge otherwise eligible voters. So that's the answer to the second part of your question, which I wanted to hit first. Could you repeat the first part to be on the safe side here? Ken?
Hey, Mr. Vogel, please press star one. One moment.
I knocked him dead with my answer.
Hey, Mr. Vogel.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Ken, we can hear you.
Great. So the folks at Boston have pretty adamantly denied that there was any plan afoot to do any of this. Do you have any independent evidence that this is occurring, that there are still plans afoot to do this?
We do indeed. I mean, the fact of the matter is, to begin with, and it's one of the reasons I laid out the background, we haven't fallen off the back of the turnip truck here. This is a standard operating procedure within the Republican Party that's been under legal challenge, by the way, somewhat futilely, because the Republicans are continuously dragged back into court and reminded once again of their obligations under the consent decree. But this has been their standard practice for three decades. We've had the same information out of Ohio that planning has been done to use the foreclosure list in this fashion. And even after these so-called denials, we've had at least one on-the-record confirmation that they intend to engage in caging activity, which by definition is an illegal act. And if, in fact, that's what they're going to do, why in the world would we assume that something that they clearly, until the light shone on the activity, plan to do, they wouldn't include in their overall caging activity that they have admitted they're going to engage in? We're not going to accept that because they were embarrassed publicly, they are going to somehow reform three decades of this kind of behavior. And this is not the time to leave it to chance. They've demonstrated that they're going to operate in bad faith, and so we're going to assume, particularly because they acknowledge an ongoing caging program, that this is a live and continuing threat, evidence of which we have seen in other states.
Ken, this is Mark Brewer. I've either been a lawyer for the Democratic Party in this state or its chair for the last 25 years. And every 2 years during that period, we've seen these caging and intimidation practices. So the Michigan Republican Party and Mr. Calabelli specifically have no credibility when it comes to this issue. I simply do not believe his denial. This fits the pattern that we've seen here in Michigan. And I simply don't believe his denial. And as Bob Bauer said, let him tell it to the judge.
Our next question comes from Greer Bernstein. Please state your media outlet.
I think that's me. It's Andrea Bernstein, WNYC Takeaway. Can you guys address the issue of what people should do if they have been foreclosed on and if they are not, if they don't live in their house anymore, how should they register to vote?
Are you speaking on a national basis or specifically about Michigan?
One moment,
sorry.
We'll get Ms. Bernstein back. One moment.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, in Michigan, if someone has lost their home because of foreclosure and they no longer live in that home, but maybe they're homeless or they don't have a home. What is the correct procedure for re-registering to vote?
Well, they would need to know that the fact that they've lost their home has no bearing whatsoever on either registration or their right to vote. That's the first and last thing we would say. If they have any questions about where they should be voting, and at this point, by the way, at this point in the cycle, if this loss of the home is recent, they can vote from their old precinct as they would be if they were still occupying their home. But the key point is they need to know this has no bearing on registration or the right to vote. Joe, did you want to add anything to that?
No, that's it. And part of it, harking back to Ken Vogel's question in terms of the effect of press on this, one of the things we do hope to achieve is to educate voters in Michigan, and for that matter elsewhere, about their rights in the wake of these this Republican plan.
Our next question comes from Gordon Trowbridge. Please state your media outlet.
Yes, thanks. I'm from the Detroit News. Just to, first of all, to clarify the response to Ken's question right now, you folks don't have any evidence beyond the original report and the history that you cite. There's nothing else that you've determined or nothing else that you found that lends any additional credence to this report out of Macomb County. Is that correct?
No, that's actually not quite correct. This is Bob Bauer. Number one, we've had the same information, again, out of the mouth of Republican operatives, that this is actively considered part of the caging program in the state of Ohio. So we're once again seeing a pattern that is consistent with the national practice I described earlier. And secondly, if you look closely at the so-called denials, even in the state of Michigan, following Mr. Carabelli's repenting, you will see that there is some discussion on the part of GOP operatives of the importance to them of continuing with the caging operation, and frankly some discussion further about how well the use of foreclosure lists fit into that operation. Now, we'd be more than happy for Mr. Carabelli to make his records available to us, his planning documents. I suspect the lawsuit is going to clarify just precisely how far advanced the planning is, but nobody looking at this record, and certainly not somebody who's worried about their right to vote here, would conclude that there's any reassurance currently available to them. The Carabelli statement, when it was originally publicized, was absolutely unequivocal. Let me quote, "We will have a list of foreclosed homes and will make sure people aren't voting from those addresses." Now, it's understandable when challenged, and particularly the repellent nature of this practice having embarrassed the Republicans once it was disclosed, that he would deny it. But we're not dealing here, I think, against this history, and particularly with evidence from other states, we're not dealing in assumptions of good faith here.
Okay, our next question comes from Margaret Tolliv. Please state your media outlet.
Hi, it's Margaret Tolliv with McClatchy Newspapers. Do any of you have an estimate of the partisan split among those facing foreclosure in Michigan? For example, does it disproportionately affect Democrats or Dem-leaning independents? Also, in seeking the injunction, what documents would that actually compel from the GOP? And if you get the injunction, practically speaking, how will it work? What will happen?
This is Mark Brewer. Let me take a crack at that. We have not done a partisan analysis, and frankly, we don't care about the partisan analysis. If one voter is disenfranchised in this state, that's one voter too many. We do believe that the Republicans have come up with this scheme because they think it will tend to intimidate and prevent people who oppose their candidates from voting. I think that's their operating assumption, but we have not done any partisan analysis ourselves.
And the second question?
Yeah, on the second question, I'm not going to forecast precisely because ultimately it's going to be up to the court how this litigation is going to proceed, but I will tell you that if an injunction is entered, I think it will very clearly establish and it will very clearly prohibit that the conduct in question. And the effect of that, I think, is going to be to end any doubt about whether this is going to happen. It would have to have that effect because I don't believe that even the Michigan Republican Party and its unit in Macomb is prepared to defy a federal court injunction. And so it would simply make it impossible for them to use these lists in any way, for the purposes of planning for challenge activities at the polls.
Okay, the next question comes from Ed Brayton. Please state your media outlet.
Yeah, this is Ed Brayton. I'm from the Michigan Messenger, the outlet that broke that story and got the quote from Carabelli in the first place. I have a couple, two questions for you. Number one, can we get a copy of the complaint that you filed today? And will that complaint, and I presume that that complaint will include the quotes from other GOP operatives in other states that you're referring to. And number two, is it your hope that discovery in the lawsuit will open up emails and memos and other documents that may have gone back and forth between the folks in the Michigan GOP, perhaps specifically the Macomb County GOP party, and reveal that they have, in fact, been obtaining these lists and planning to use them?
This is Bob Bauer, and again, Mark and Joe can add what they will here. I'll just give you a quick answer on both those questions. On the first question, the complaint is currently available. We've posted it on the website. Brent, I don't happen to have that link in front of me at the moment, but it's available. And before this call is over, we'll let you know where you can find it because it's already been posted. And as I mentioned to you, it was filed about an hour and a half ago, so it's a live suit. Secondly, as to discovery, we expect, not just hope for, but expect that that's what we'll find. And secondly, I suspect that we'll also begin, perhaps, to trace the pattern of communication within the GOP on a national basis and from state to state that demonstrates the way in which this particular caging activity fits within the overall national program.
Ed, this is Mark Brewer. Our history here in Michigan is that these programs that come up every 2 years are centrally directed by the Michigan Republican Party. We've seen manuals. We've seen other evidence of that over the years. The local party chairs don't freelance. So I believe that the pattern's being followed here, that this is a centrally driven and directed program by the Michigan Republican Party.
Our next question comes from Kathleen Gray. Please state your media outlet.
Hi, I'm from the Detroit Free Press. Bob, you talked about some specific caging activities that the GOP has admitted that they're going to get involved in Michigan. Do you have some specific citations that you can give regarding that? And secondly, there's been some evidence that there's an organization out there that's been submitting fraudulent voter registration forms. I'm wondering if you're going to be doing something about that as well.
Well, let me answer the question in two parts. First of all, both questions. The first question, the answer is we do have a citation in the complaint to the comments made by a Republican attorney for Republican Challenge Operation that they think caging is a perfectly legitimate practice and something in his mistaken view that both parties do. I have that right, correct, Joe?
Yes. Basically, this Eric Doster, former counsel for the Michigan GOP, who represents that he's going to be organizing the Republican challengers in Macomb on Election Day, was quoted in the very article in which the county chair denied the use of foreclosure lists. Mr. Doster was asked whether Michigan Republicans plan to create a challenge list based on return direct mail, the practice Bob was describing, and he said, quotes, "I think so. I know this has been done in years past." So
that's the first question. And secondly, on the second question, we are obviously interested and committed to a full fair process by which voters can participate in this election. And we are continually asked about allegations of fraud. That is obviously not the evidence in what we have in front of us today. If you look across the United States at the moment at lawsuits that the Republicans have either filed or practices in which they've engaged in various states like Wisconsin and Ohio, the threat to the electoral process this year isn't coming from fraud, which is bandied about for, frankly, political purposes, as far as we can tell. The threat here is through massive voter suppression, which, as I said, follows the national pattern. Obviously, if there are any particular instances, and they usually do boil down to very specific individual cases of misconduct, they will be addressed. We don't have any doubt about that. What we're dealing with is a national and systematic campaign to disenfranchise voters through a variety of well-established mechanisms of voter suppression within a political party that has been continually called to account for this conduct in the courts, which is why I opened by running through that history with you.
Hey, this is Brent. We have time for one more question.
Okay, then our final question will come from Steve Wilson. Please state your media outlet.
Hi, it's Steve Wilson with WXYZ-TV in Detroit. Apart from the inconvenience of being challenged, which might be embarrassing and something that some voters may want to avoid at the polls, can you discuss if they are eligible to vote, will they still not be allowed to vote and their vote ultimately be counted when it is determined that they're eligible?
Well, the biggest problem that we face is that the very act of taking them aside to question them on this basis is illegal. It shouldn't even be a question. They're not entitled to it. If voters were pulled aside and told that they were being challenged on the basis that they had a speeding ticket, that obviously would be illegal, but it would have a disenfranchising effect for those voters who are embarrassed or who don't want to answer the question and who leave. Some people can't wait to be questioned. The whole purpose of this sort of exercise is to operate on the basis of an illegal act to discourage voting. And so whether or not subsequently the voter's eligibility can be established and so that voter in turn can vote is beside the point, because the question shouldn't be raised in the first place. It has a complete disenfranchising effect on the basis of an illegal premise, which is that somehow the loss of your home in the United States deprives you of the right to vote. And as somebody recently said, we long ago got rid of property qualifications for voting rights in America.
Steve, this is Mark Brewer. I've seen these tactics operate in person, and what happens in a polling place is that there's a massive ripple effect. Once a voter is pulled out and staff time has to be devoted to questioning them, everybody else in the room then is watching. They're concerned about what's going on. They're worried that they're not going to be able to have a chance to vote, and you start to see people leave. And that's, frankly, the purpose of this, not just to disenfranchise that poor voter, but to discourage others from staying and voting.